welcome to Movie Banter.
Yay.
We seem to be enjoying by the fun.
Oh, yeah. How you doing?
Joey, isn't
it? Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
It's all the same.
Yeah. See, I don't know because this is movie banter.
We never watched TV.
I've never even heard of it. I don't believe it. No.
Parameters of that.
Yeah. I want to watch TV. I go to the cinema and just.
Fair enough. Your DVD collection must get most unused then.
A little bit. Actually, it's funny to say, for the first time today, I've just registered on Amazon as a seller.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, don't mean basement.
I just thought, well, I've got too many that I bought once and watched and thought, nah, that'll do.
Yeah.
So it's quite good. You put them on there, and generally you're looking at about £2 a DVD if they sell.
Is that plus postage?
No, that's including all that. So
really,
Amazon pay you. I'm sounding like a salesman for Amazon now.
That's right. I'm now just interested. Sorry, listeners. We'll be back with you in a second.
Yeah. They pay your postage for you.
Oh, right. Yeah. So how do you
postage credit sort of thing?
Okay. So you just have to put it in an envelope and send
exactly,
it to them.
Exactly. Yeah. They'll give you some money. So
fair enough.
So yeah. So I figure, you know, $75 and get a new DVD. So.
Yeah, I should do that because I've got various films.
Yeah, but isn't it good to have a bit of a library? You know,
no,
a collection.
But there's so many films that, like things like The Yards, which I bought. I think it was buy one get one free, and that was the only other film. Mark Wahlberg. Oh, it was boring and rubbish.
Oh well.
And then you get things like I've got the Lethal Weapon non-director's cuts because I've got the director's cuts and replaced them.
And they're just not worth it.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And I've got the Daredevil director's cut, which is actually much better than Daredevil original. So I've got the Daredevil non-director's cut as well.
Yeah, but I've got some weird stuff because I've had to study it, and I'm not going to give them up. They're part of my life now.
If anyone wants Class, which is Rob Lowe, Jacqueline Bisset, Andrew McCarthy, and Cliff Robertson, and they're all named on the front cover, so that's clearly the level we're looking at. It's sort of St. Elmo's Fire. That isn't an almost.
Is this
fire,
just you're now just selling your DVDs?
Well, exactly.
To podcast,
you know, if you want
to,
yeah, on Amazon they're about £2. I'll do you a deal on that one. So
why are you so desperate to shift that one?
Well, it's just the one that's staring out at me is one of those films that I'm never ever going to watch again.
Fair enough. Anyway, for a podcast where we've got a huge amount to cram in, we've gone massively off topic already.
Welcome to. I'm Paul Carenza, by the way.
I'm John Sands,
and I'm Jennifer Masters. Hello.
And this week we've got a mammoth week. So much to talk about.
We do because we haven't actually recorded anything for a month.
Well, no, indeed, because we had our sort of review of the year, didn't we, last time? And so lots of films have been out in the meantime. We've been to see... I haven't. You've been to see loads.
Normally, it's Paul who's travelling the country doing gigs and sees lots of things, and you see slightly fewer. But this time, actually, I've seen about four or five films.
I haven't been travelling much, really.
I've only seen a couple. I have been travelling, but out of the country, so, where you can't... Yeah.
Did you get any airline movies?
No. Wasn't long
Switzerland's
enough.
Not far enough. Yeah. They don't have cinemas in Switzerland.
No, they don't.
No.
Just money and chocolate.
Yeah,
that's all they need.
Films well, about, I went films to about Austria Nazi then, really.
Indeed, which is a great radio station.
oh, dear.
Nazi just, classics.
You're just, using, you're just doing your act now.
Indeed, that's right.
Wrong.
1939, 1945, medium wave. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Is that wrong?
It's not right.
To be fair. It's accurate.
Well,
it's just not morally right.
Yes.
This week, we'll be talking about The Road.
Mm-hmm.
And The Book of Eli, and Sherlock Holmes, and Nine, and Exam. Those are all the releases that are out sort of nowish that we'll be discussing.
And other DVD and TV viewings as well,
indeed.
If we get time.
Those thrown in. Plus the Golden Globes, they happened but 24 to 48 hours ago.
Yes.
Ah.
And
which always seems to sort of pass us by slightly in the UK.
Well,
I think because I think in America they get televised and we watch them. Here we can get, you know, in the news, these people won, and that's it.
Well, true, exactly. Yes.
Whereas the Oscars get more coverage.
Yes, I suppose, because we've got Oscars and then BAFTAs, I suppose, is the other thing.
Yes.
Whereas America doesn't have BAFTAs.
No, British. The Golden Globes are kind of the American BAFTAs,
I feel. The afters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except they're before, so they're
of course.
Pre-afters.
Afters is like pudding, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you want for afters? Oh, I'd like an after, please.
But we'll throw in some comments about the Golden Globes and who won and who should have won.
Yes.
But we could kick off with Barrel of Laughs.
Indeed.
But it's The Road.
Oh, The Road. It's hilarious.
It's a laugh a minute.
Laugh a mile, isn't it, really? It's, it's what a hoot. What a hoot.
Hoot.
Yes,
I think
it's
more of a boo-hoot.
A boo-hoot. Way
nice.
Really nice. See what it did there. Clever. Myself and Jen, we've just come straight from seeing
straight
it.
Straight from it.
Slitting our wrists, really. It's quite an onslaught. The Road,
it's a hard watch.
Yes, The Road is long with many a winding turn.
Yes.
Well, there's not many winding turns. It's long and straight.
Long and straight and full of cannibals.
surrounded by death.
Yes.
And gloom. And I mean, the fact that it starts off with the narration going, every day the sky is greyer. You think, okay, it's not going to be a riot here, is it, really?
Yeah.
If it is a riot, it's not going to be a happy riot.
Yes. It's based on a book by, is it Cormac McCarthy?
Cormac McCarthy.
Yes, yes, who wrote No Country for Old Men.
Indeed, yes.
And apparently the book is brilliant, which I need to read.
It hasn't sold the book to me, to be honest.
Well, no. I mean, I'm sure it'll be quite a traumatic read, but probably quite a good one. But not knowing the book may help, because approaching the film just by itself, it's extremely good and very powerful and very moving.
Yeah.
It's just really, really depressing.
It's relentless.
That's exactly what I did. I actually wasn't too sure what it was about when I went in. Like I say, I've been away.
I knew very little about it.
And I hadn't had a clue. And, yeah, I don't know if that really helps.
I mean, essentially, it's about a father and son trying to work their way across this dying planet.
Yes.
And we don't know exactly what caused it, we just know.
No, well, that's something we ended up wondering about, didn't we?
Yeah, because it's kind of like, there seems to be like a lesson to be learnt from all this, except for the lesson seems to be life's rather crap and then you die.
Pretty much. Well, that's more like the triumph of the human spirit about desperate to survive in against any odds.
Yeah, but it just seems that they're, you know, we'd like to know why this suddenly went so awfully wrong.
I think that's
wrong.
Almost the problem, is that because it's such a relentless, depressing, like, there's no hope in the film, really. Well, little hope, anyway. Yeah. Very little hope in the film. There's also, that's built on by the fact there's no lesson. You can't learn anything from it, because we don't know what can we do? How do we stop this event happening? And we don't know whether it's use less oil, eat more red meat. I don't know.
See, I wasn't looking
any
for...
Any clues, please?
I wasn't looking for a sort of a message pre the film. I was just taking from it, as in it's just good to see people fighting to survive.
Yes.
Sort of in a good way. It's father and son run across with cannibals and roaming gangs who just have lost all sense of morality and justice and anything.
Mm.
And on occasion, the son just says, oh, are we the good guys? Yes, we're the good guys. And you just know how you hang on to that, or try and hang on to that, in this world. And the father starts to struggle a bit with it and starts to go off the rails slightly, but still is trying to teach his son. Oh, no, that's what I found interesting. It's just how humans operate in this environment.
Well, true, yes.
And the innocence of a child, and how, you know, you can probably learn quite a lot from the simplicity of just trying to do the right thing. But, you know, we mentioned that there's a glimmer of hope at the end.
Really?
A glimmer of hope.
A glimmer. A little glimmerette.
There's a glimmerette.
I think I was saying to you, that there's one... Mate, in the whole film, I think there's one moment which is going to... I'm so happy this has happened. And the rest of it is just layers of awfulness.
I was ready for...
The highlight is them not being eaten at one point.
No. That's the highlight. Yeah. Then. I mean, generally, for the first few scenes, the scenes seem to alternate between people trying to kill the kid... And then the dad trying to protect, you know, the kid from them. And then the dad trying to kill the kid as well. So, if anyone's going to kill you, then I will.
Be.
I'm
going to kill him.
So the kid's like, oh, God, I haven't got a chance, have I?
Yeah, but see, that's another... The father has a gun with two bullets. And his intention is essentially one for him, one for his son.
Just to stop themselves being eaten alive, horribly.
One for the road.
Yes. But I found that quite interesting.
One more, that's all you can have, and then you have to stop.
Okay, fair enough.
But it's the times when you're thinking, you know, what would I do in that situation? Could I bring myself to, you know, knowing the horrible situation they're in, is it better to, you know, to kill your son and then kill yourself, or persuade your son to kill himself because he knows he couldn't do it? And I don't know, so it raised interesting questions like that.
Yes.
In terms of how
it's definitely about the struggle with this film.
Oh,
isn't it?
It's all struggle. The time.
Yeah. And not only struggle between, you know, the guys in the film and survival, but also the struggle between us as an audience and can we stick, and we come through. And it's a very powerful film. So I'm sort of slightly doing it down by the fact it's so bleak. But as a father-son story, it's very well told.
Yeah. I mean, if you just ready yourself for the fact that it's going to be quite intense and quite awful as an experience on some level.
Yeah.
But also there's stuff you can take away from it. Well, I thought. And it's uplifting if depressing.
Yeah,
I think my problem with the film is only that I thought it was done for it. I think it's the old thing of, do you mark a film as in terms of, did I enjoy it? Did I get a lot out of it? Or did it do what it set out to achieve very well, regardless of whether or not that's my kind of thing? And I think it did the latter very well. It did what it set out to achieve. Is it something that I would therefore recommend to everybody and say, oh, you've got to go and see the road? I probably wouldn't, but
it's a hard sell.
Yeah.
But if you're hearing this and thinking, I'm willing to, at the risk of abusing it to sound like a cliche, I'm willing to go on this journey and watch the road, then you definitely should. Hmm. But if you're saying, oh, I think it'll just be a bit depressing, you'll probably find it hugely depressing.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, because there really isn't much in the way of plot either. There's no real...
No.
It's not like they're saying, we have to get to here and then everything will be great. It's more they've sort of got a goal in mind just as to where they're going. But it's kind of
I didn't even think that's... that. I think the plot is just literally don't die yet.
Yeah.
They don't seem to have a goal much, really. It's not even... No, I mean, they... The road.
It's just trying to get somewhere warmer. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's it. It's more of a slice of life, sort of. Just it's
massive slice. Well, yeah. That unfortunately, no one can eat, which is a shame because they're all starving.
Yes, I must admit, I'm still here looking at a completely full, well, maybe a quarter... tub of popcorn, because to be honest, you feel kind of bad just stuffing your face full of sugary goodness.
Don't chew into the microphone.
Chew into the microphone. When everyone else is chewing. But
it's not insects. Real.
I know.
Having said that, though, it does make you think, you know, while the people in the film aren't real, there are people in the world who are starving to death.
Yeah.
It makes you aware of things.
Hmm.
It's a very, very well made film. It just may not be everyone's cup of tea.
At the same time, something you said actually, something like Schindler's List, for example, which I know you probably still haven't seen yet.
No, not yet.
We'll do that one.
I'm holding out.
I'd say, because that is, again, bleak, depressing, very well done, but it's a long, long, hard slog, that one. But I would say that a film like that is more significant and more of a must-see because it's about a real thing.
Yeah.
Whereas the fact that The Road is more, futuristic, fictitious, makes me sort of less want to recommend it, only because if this was about a real... escapade that had happened in the past, and it's two, you know, a father son 500 years ago venturing across, I don't know history, but if this something like this had happened, then great, I would feel more in touch with, you know, I'd be able to sort of go, okay, I appreciate more what they went through, and I've learned something about that struggle that once happened. The fact that it's more of a futuristic lesson, and go, ah, well, okay.
Because I didn't view it as that much of a futuristic thing. I just thought it was more, you know, let's put people in this situation, and I feel it's an accurate portrayal of what people would be like in that situation. I found it very believable, because it's not particularly. I didn't find it very futuristic. It was more. If you put a father and son in this situation, son who doesn't really know anything about the world, and father who was desperate to protect him, I feel that's exactly how it would all play out.
Yeah. So, no, fair enough.
It's kind of weird that you say that it's not futuristic, because I was looking at, you know, the feel of everything, and it seems as if this film, in a parallel dimension, happened about 20 years ago. It's got the feeling of that nostalgia about the olden days, but so it's kind of weird to place it in a timeline.
Yeah, true. So. Well, there's no times mentioned in it.
Because if there was, you would have.
I'd be there, like, I was looking for it. I was looking, but it wasn't there. But,
One thing also, well, one slightly odd thing, because a lot of it, most of it is just the father and son working through, but you also get flashbacks to just before and then kind of during whatever global thing was going on. With when they were more of a happy family with his wife. And that seemed a little bit, not pointless, but it sort of added something to it. Made you aware of what he'd lost.
It's that also sense of longing.
I didn't do all that much.
I think also you needed to lift it a little bit and make it, finally a blue sky sort of thing.
So
a little bit of levity.
Did we ever really see outside then?
Yeah. Briefly, when he's hugging a horse. Fire. But yes, actually, that because Charlie Theron is in it, and you're kind of looking at her going, I don't like you.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The character here, her. I was just there going, don't like you at all.
Right, pathetic.
Some people just can't cope, basically.
Yeah.
Mm. Buck up your
Put yourself
ideas.
Together, girl. Yeah. Come on. It's only the post-apocalypse.
I do also want one vaguely not quite comedic thing to take from it, but only because it's got Viggo Mortensen in it from Lord of the Rings, of course, and there is one significant point with him and a ring. And I was just thinking, no, it's not funny because it's quite tragic. Yeah. But I was just thinking, oh, there's parallels to be drawn. He doesn't use the word precious because it would be entirely inappropriate. But that's the road.
It's quite telling that I Viggo Mortensen, actually, that's one good thing to say, is that he's very good in it, and he is picking some more and more interesting projects to do since Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
He's you know, a lot of the other guys in that, of course, more Hollywoody.
Yeah.
But he's done Eastern Promises, which was excellent, and
What was the History of Violence?
History of Violence. Well, it was very good. David Cronenberg. Yeah. So yeah, I think he's any film that he's in, you know, it's pretty well picked.
Yeah.
So he's.
I think this one's going to do very well, actually.
So I think. So it's probably not one for the DVD collection, Or if I do get it, I'll put it on Amazon next week. Yeah. So,
No, but probably worth a watch if you think you can bring yourself to.
It's
I was hoping, worthy film.
I don't think I'm ruining anything by saying when they come over a ridge and they find a beach of some sort, kind of hoping you'd see the Statue of Liberty sticking out. And then they hit the ground and go, whoa!
What have you done?
This is Earth. Oh, of course it's Earth. We always knew it was.
Yeah, we know. I never thought it wasn't.
Oh, well, let's have a swim. Good. Another film out sort of only a week later, which is The Book of Eli, yes. Which is rather odd that it's sort of all this road post-apocalyptic stuff all
yeah,
at once.
Which is but, it's the nature of films to come out sort of two, you know, in pairs, covering similar...
And there's a character in The Road called Eli.
Is
that?
That's the only character name.
Really? Yeah, it's the only character name in The Road is called Eli.
Hmm.
Doesn't have a book, but if he did, he'd be in this film.
Well, yes. Only I've seen this one. Not in the world. But of the three of us, only I've seen this.
Yeah, go on then, John. Come
on. This is slightly more. If you watch the trailers, you might be mistaken for thinking, well, not mistaken, but you lured into thinking it's kind of an action movie version of The Road, with Denzel Washington on the road and then just attacking people and blowing things up and Mad Max esque. And it's really not. I think all the action is probably in the trailer. There are probably maybe four fight sequences, all of which last about 12 seconds, because Denzel Washington is very skilled and just hacks people apart and then moves on. But it's the same sort of principle of The Road, in that Denzel Washington is walking across America, has been for 30 years, which implies he might have got a bit lost, yes. Or he's just taking his time. but he is in possession of... They're a bit coy about what the book actually is, but I think other reviews have mentioned it, and you find out soon enough that he's in possession of the last Bible on Earth. Because whatever caused the apocalypse was... They hint it was a world war largely caused by religion.
Right.
So afterwards, all the survivors burned all the Bibles, or possibly all religious books. And Denzel Washington had felt called by a voice to, and he finds a Bible and is now taking it to somewhere. He doesn't know where, but he'll know it when he gets there. And on the course of his travels, comes across a town run by Gary Oldman in a very Western sort of shanty town, building it up kind of way.
So Gary Oldman playing a bad guy.
Yes.
Against type.
Well, yes. But it's kind of, because I haven't seen him in that much of late, but considering he has been in Batman and Harry Potter, it's all been slightly PG friendly.
True.
It's quite nice to see him playing something a bit vicious and mental again for a while.
We like the Oldman.
Yes. And Gary Oldman can read, which a lot of people can't. A lot of people seem to have been killed or blinded in the war. I think they seem to be damaged to the sky, which caused the sun to shine through and blinded various people. So Gary Oldman is married to a woman who's blind.
Mm-hmm.
So these two men just come up against each other, with Denzel Washington has a Bible, Gary Oldman wants the Bible, is sort of willing just to kill him and take it, but doesn't quite want to, because he wants to use the Bible to then say to the people in this village, look at this Bible, this tells you how you should live. I know how you should live, so listen to me and do everything I tell you to do.
Hmm.
I've been to those churches.
And Denzel Washington sort of knows, you know, it almost sounds appealing. It's like sounds, you know, this is someone who can work, but then he knows it's the wrong decision, so he wants to leave. And then a bit more fighting ensues. But it's an interesting film, because it's quite an interesting premise, if not fully explored, because that Gary Oldman could be a very interesting bad guy, and Denzel Washington is sort of a flawed but driven hero. But they don't. It ends up pretty much just saying, oh, I'm going to try and kill you, and you're going to try and get away, and that's it. But there's interesting interplay between the two of them, to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a couple of interesting turns. I wouldn't go quite so far as a twist, but how it all plays out is interesting. Mm. The ending seems to divide people a bit. Some people say it's ridiculous. Other people say it's sort of ridiculous, but it also sort of works, and then... Yeah,
I had a tweet from Sean Jacks, who says, a good film, bit slow in parts, bit of a cack ending, but overall quite good, makes you think.
Yeah, I mean, the ending, I can see why it would divide people. And it's one aspect of it, trying to be convoluted as possible, is almost unnecessary.
Right.
There's sort of one thing, you go, and then you see another bit, and you sort of go, right... And you don't need that other bit.
I'm sure that makes sense when we
yeah, it does.
Abstract.
But
is the end when they just find the world's last remaining photocopier and photocopy the Bible, have a copy each,
yeah,
go home happy.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, nice.
I think in part it's Gary Oldman doesn't want anyone else to have a Bible either. He'd lose all
power's
his power.
Gone.
Oh, I see.
And then even aside from the possible twist or turn, and there's another lump of the ending as well, which sort of wraps things up. Mm. So it all hangs together, and it's very interesting to watch, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If not, I mean, you might be able to pick holes in it, but it's very watchable. Denzel Washington is very good. And Gary Oldman is very good. It's got Mila Kunis in it as well.
Oh, okay.
Of Family Guy and Max Payne fame, which are only two things I can think of. Oh, and what was the...
Oh, she's in a rom-com, wasn't she?
Yes.
She was in...
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
That's the fella.
Yes.
Ah.
Yes. And she's in this playing the daughter of Gary Oldman's blind wife. Oh, but okay. Not Gary Oldman's daughter. Who he's trying to make be a prostitute. And she doesn't really want to, perhaps unsurprisingly.
I don't think he should have the Bible.
No.
I haven't decided which side I'm going to come down on. He's a
violent pro-prostitution water rationing tyrant. Yeah. That's not really your no, biblical
I'm,
kind of.
I'm on Denzel's side.
Well,
this
yeah, exactly.
I don't care what you say. I'm going to be. I'm going to stand out.
And it is. It's a. It could be very popular among religious people. I think it's not a hugely religious film. Yeah. It's more about the importance of the Bible and how this is an important old book. Well, Denzel Washington is coming at it from a religious point, but the general story of the film is. The books like this should be preserved because of their age and importance and significance, rather than just burning everything just in case. But it's not hugely religious in terms of preaching and the story of God and how important. But Denzel Washington has that side of it. But it's not really he doesn't really preach to people because he's trying to keep the book hidden, so he's just taking it somewhere he knows. But I feel that church people could probably go along and watch it and enjoy it, maybe except for all the killing.
Right.
That's so in the Bible as well.
Well, this is the thing. And so, and Denzel Washington, then he doesn't just kill people haphazardly. If they attack him, then he retaliates and then feels bad about it and asks for forgiveness at a later date. So it's sort of religious, but not. I mean, Gav, my flatmate, who's very, very non-religious, really enjoyed it. So he obviously wasn't put off by the religious content.
Yes.
So if you're after. If the idea of the road sort of appeals, but you think it'll be depressing, then the Book of Eli is less depressing.
Right.
It's not hugely cheerful, but it's not more...
neither a laugh riot.
Yeah,
no.
To be honest, it wouldn't be that hard to find a less depressing film than
The Road. No,
I mean, the Book of Eli is far more lighter, mainly because there are more people. Because in the road, the world is dead. There are no animals. There's hardly any food. People are scraping for everything. In the Book of Eli. It's been a war, so there are still animals around. He kills a deer at one point. He kills a cat at one point.
So they have luxury, basically.
Cats just roaming free to be eaten.
Here's a question, then. Given that in The Road, we don't know what is the tragedy that befell the world.
Yes.
Could The Road have happened after the Book of Eli?
Possibly.
Although, actually, that would be probably getting you to give away the ending of the Book of Eli, so I won't persist on that.
No, because it's not that the Book of Eli ends with the world being destroyed. Yeah, I mean,
it's
no.
all back again.
No. Possibly.
Yeah,
though they could be sort of going on simultaneously, but I get the feeling that the road is a natural disaster that happened, I feel. And the Book of Eli is more of a man-made disaster.
Right.
Sort of. Although The Road could possibly take place in a little subsection of 2012.
Or Zombieland.
No, because Zombieland is more all the infrastructure still in place.
Well, years later, it could be.
Well, that's true. Except there's no zombies in either film.
Well, The Road could take place years after any film, really.
Pretty much.
It could be the last film.
Yeah, when Harry Met Sally leads onto The Road.
Exactly. Yeah.
natural.
That's the alternative.
That's Harry and Sally have a kid. And then the war happens and they have to go off roaming. Oh.
When Harry and Sally died.
Yes, when Harry and Sally nearly ate their own child. See, the unmade sequel. Anyway, so the Book of Eli, it's a slightly more mainstream film, but does interesting things.
Yes.
I definitely say it's worth a watch.
It does seem that there are so many post-apocalyptic movies out there.
Yes.
That... maybe with the rest we should just call pre-apocalyptic and just leave it at that. But we are going to... Desert Island Flicks this week we will have as the best post-apocalyptic film.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Ever.
Yes.
If there's one film left then when all the rest have been burned and eaten by zombies,
okay.
Then what will that film be? We will discuss that.
Right.
Later.
Fair enough.
Which DVD would you like to eat? No food left. So, in the meantime, we've also got some of your emails and tweets, This Week in Movie History, and other things. But should we look at the Golden Globes?
Yeah.
It's modern, it's topical, it's now.
It's hip, it's down on the kids.
It's something that I haven't read yet.
Well, that's because we're British. Generally, these Golden Globes, the only thing we have interested in it is that Ricky Gervais hosted it.
Yes, that's right.
And did a slightly average job.
Yeah. Any British people who are nominated, Britain's up for Golden Globes. But this time, I don't think any British people won anything. So therefore, the media is, no one cares.
Fair enough.
There is one of the categories, I forget which one it is, where it's mostly British nominees, except...
Is it? Which one's that?
Win.
But I can't remember which one it is now.
Best Supporting Actress. Best Actress. It's got Emily Blunt, Helen Mirren, Kerry Mulligan.
Yeah.
That's 3 out of 5.
That's not bad,
not
is
bad.
It? Of course, none of them won.
None of them won, though.
Exactly, yeah.
Conspiracy.
Best film was Avatar, apparently.
Yeah, I disagree with that. Because it can be tied in with Best Director, which is also
I think
Cameron
so. Best Director, James Cameron.
Weirdly,
as well,
this is one of those instances because normally Best Director and Best Film, I know especially at the Oscars, I don't know so much about the Golden Globes, tend to go hand in hand, and sort of understandably because the two tend to be quite so closely connected. In this case, I think Best Director James Cameron is a good call. I mean, you can argue it either way, but I'd say that James Cameron earned it. It was
a hell of an
achievement to make Avatar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Avatar is not the best film because it's not. The story and dialogue are too average, which doesn't mean bad. They're run of the mill.
Best
but it's overall, isn't it? Yeah.
But the overall impression of the film is brilliant.
The question is: are the visual effects so good that they outweigh the fact that the story?
No,
is
but I don't really like don't just saying that Avatar is all about the effects. That kind of undermines the overall experience of the film because then you just say, "Oh, it's pretty, but I don't care." Because I did care and I did enjoy it. But it shouldn't be the best film. The best film should be The Hurt Locker, because that's...
Well, yeah, the other nominees, The Hurt Locker, Precious, which we haven't had it yet, Up in the Air, which is out this week, and we'll review next time, and Inglourious Basterds, which, of course, we had last year, and I thought was very good. Probably not really
I wouldn't say best
category,
film, I don't know.
But yeah, I say The Hurt Locker of that lot, really.
Because I think best film, in a slightly pretentious way, should be almost flawless, kind of. And Avatar is—it's not criticisms as such, but you can say that the dialogue and the plot were not its strongest elements. And likewise, Inglourious Basterds, you can say it was a bit too long, maybe. And other points—I mean, it's very good, but you can make a couple of points. Whereas The Hurt Locker, I'd be hard pushed to say any bit of it was less than brilliant.
Yes. If I can skip ahead, actually, I was going to mention this in the email section, but it's sort of relevant now. We've had an email from Blair talking about best films of the last year, as we were talking about our last episode. Gran Torino was his particular favourite. Mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood at his best with a simple story that was told brilliantly and an ending that brought a tear to my eye. Now, he was saying, though, that if any of Gran Torino, The Wrestler, Frost Nixon or Benjamin Button had been released in this award season rather than last, they'd probably have swept most of the major trophies. And while I think Benjamin Button, I don't necessarily agree with myself, but I think Gran Torino and The Wrestler, particularly, both of which were largely overlooked, Gran Torino entirely overlooked. Again, I thought last year were brilliant, but up against some stiff competition last year. Mm-hmm. Would you look at this year and, you know, generally they're looking at the shortlist includes things like Avatar and Inglourious Basterds and things like that, and I don't think it's quite up there this year. I don't think the standard generally for award season is as golden.
I mean,
as
all good films, but it's not or no obvious candidates for they should definitely be. It's more sort of picking the best of what there is.
Well, even like Up in the Air, which again looks very good, it sort of seems quite a romantic comedy or with a slightly dramatic side. And
I'm loath to agree with you just because I've heard so many very good things about
it. Well, again, I've heard many good things, but looking at the trailer, I'm not seeing Oscar written all over it. I'm not seeing... Maybe that's just in the traditional way, that they are trying to switch it this year and make it a bit more mainstream, because I think it's been too many biopics and, you know, you look at Hilary Swank's latest, which is, Amelia Earhart.
Yes.
And it looks... That looks like a film that in the trailer just says, we want Oscars.
Yes.
That's really what it says.
And the actual film was apparently quite poor.
Exactly. So I think maybe they're trying to switch it this year and have a bit more of an all-over...
Well, no, especially for the Oscars, because there'll be 10 Best Picture
nominations.
There
will, won't they? Indeed,
it'll be... I don't think it'll diminish it, but it'll open it up to slightly more... I mean, what sounds like an obvious Best Picture candidate, the definition of that will have to change a bit.
Yeah.
And for the better, probably.
Golden Globes, of course, also, they split up the best film into also best film, brackets, musical or comedy.
Which I quite like,
it's
actually.
Because nice,
otherwise, comedies you get overlooked.
Give it a look.
Really.
And The Hangover won that one.
I think that's earned.
Yeah.
500 Days of Summer is probably a worthy consideration as well, but The Hangover is better.
So is it like best drama and then best...
No, it's just best film, musical, comedy, and then best film. It's only musical and comedy gets separated out.
Right.
And everything else is lumped in together.
Okay.
Which generally, of course, means comedy, because there's not many musicals made.
No. Yeah,
this year, of
thinking.
Course, there is 9 as well.
Yes.
Which I believe, have you guys both seen 9?
No,
I have.
It's just disappeared.
It came and went, didn't it? Didn't
You say it came and went. I think I saw it maybe last week. And it was out on. It was out by Christmas, because I nearly saw it at Christmas.
Christmas Day, wasn't it? Boxing Day.
Quite possibly.
Yeah,
so that's,
possibly.
Yeah, it's been two or three weeks.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thoughts therein?
I can do this now and relatively quickly, because it's fine. I did enjoy it. There are 1 or 2 memorable songs, possibly, maybe, which I only really remember having seen them in the trailer. so they kind of impacted.
Yeah.
I'd be hard put aside from one or two bits. And also it keeps crossing over the Vita in my head as well for some weird reason. Okay, bits of the songs. But I mean, it's an interesting enough film. Yeah. It's relatively well acted. Well, Daniel Day-Lewis is good and watchable, but I kind of wanted a bit more plot. It's basically Daniel Day-Lewis trying to make a film. He's an Italian film director, and keeps being besieged by either actual women or memories of women from his past. Mm. His muse and his wife and his mistress and his, I think, a prostitute that he met when he was a child and his mother and other people.
Mm.
And all sort of swirling around. They all get about a song each, and it's good. I mean, it's fine, it's watchable, but it's not really anything special at the same time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it probably got nominations because it's really the only musical I can think of out this year. But it didn't win anything, which I think is quite telling. And it didn't do very well at the box office either, which I think is a bit harsh. But, yeah, I can't really see the appeal.
Yeah, there were nominations for Penelope Cruz and Daniel Day-Lewis and Marion Cotillard.
Marion Cotillard was extremely good in this, actually. I'd say she was... I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis is very watchable, as always, but it's not a typically acting role for him. He doesn't have all that much to do. Hmm. Whereas Marion Cotillard, it was extremely good. I may just have been paying more attention to her for about half the film. I was desperately trying to remember her name and couldn't. And suddenly about halfway through, I just had a brainwave and very nearly went, oh, in the middle of the cinema, but didn't. But yes, then suddenly placed her from Public Enemies, among other films.
And Le'Veon Rose.
Yes, which I haven't seen. But she was very, very good. But beyond that, it's fine.
It is
what
it is.
I would maybe rent it if you're musical inclined.
I think I'll try that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's worth a watch if you like musicals, but it's just nothing special.
I do like musicals, but Nine is one of the few musicals I know no songs from. I just don't know anything about them at all. I do know that it's meant to be, it's based on 8.5, isn't it?
Fellini's film. Which I haven't seen either.
So it's clearly grown half since that one. I don't quite know how.
That's
It's inflation, isn't it? Really?
I see.
But I think the musical itself is. I think there are more. Well, as often happens with film versions, there are more songs in the stage version,
right?
Which had Antonio Banderas in it.
Oh, that's right.
Going back a few years. Because there's a friend of ours who is big into a musical theatre, and she's a huge fan of the musical. I think she enjoyed the film, but wasn't that bothered.
Yeah, yeah.
She wasn't a fan of Nicole Kidman in it.
Oh, really?
I think singing.
Well, a lot of the musical theatre sort of hoi polloi ever since Moulin Rouge. And, well, Nicole, really? What are you doing?
Yeah, well, she's not. I mean, to the untrained ear, she was fine, but because she'd already said she was apparently a bit weak, and then watching a film, I could sort of see, she wasn't a strong point.
Mm. She was all right.
I mean, she was fine, but
yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of criticism as well about Sweeney Todd. So,
oh yes, but again, if you're not a musical aficionado, then it's fine.
Then you just don't sweat the small stuff and enjoy the film.
Well,
indeed,
Christoph Waltz.
Oh, yes.
Inglourious Basterds get Best Supporting Actor.
Woohoo!
Oh, Best Supporting Actor, I feel. I mean, he probably could have got... Maybe he could have got Best Actor. But...
Well, no, he's not. He's not the main... I mean, Brad Pitt's probably the main dude, isn't he?
Really? I'd argue that. Christoph Waltz probably has more lines than anyone else in the film.
Well, but he's a character actor, isn't he? He's not a lead.
No,
he's not the lead.
No, but I think it could have gone either way. But they probably thought, put him up for Best Supporting Actor, he's got a better chance. Which is
true,
fair enough.
True. And I think well-deserved. I think he's...
Oh, yes.
And
yeah,
I'm sure,
absolutely.
You know, everyone was rousing for him there. So,
See, again, I mean, looking down the other options. I don't see no because we've got Matt Damon, Woody Harrelson, Stanley Tucci, and Christopher Plummer. None of those have made much of an inroad into my consciousness.
Well, Stanley Tucci has been hotly tipped for Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for Lovely Bones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently he's very good in it. And again, he's one of those hard-working character actors who has never got an Oscar.
Yeah.
And so everyone's sort of saying he's about due.
Oh, let's give him one.
Go on.
Don't like Christopher Waltz though.
He's had the Golden Globe now.
Exactly.
He's only new.
Don't get greedy.
But again, then you've got Matt Damon from Invictus. I think Invictus sounds like another film which is trying for an Oscar and maybe trying a bit too hard and just doesn't quite... I think it's meant to be a good film, but doesn't quite...
Well, again, I saw that from the trailer.
I
thought, it looks a bit too much, you know. Well, no, just too much wanting an Oscar.
Yeah.
And then I saw directed by Clint Eastwood and thought, okay, I'll go and see it because he can't...
I will go and see it, but I think it's not quite as good as you want it to be. Apparently.
I think Stanley Tucci should get the Oscar and then... Christoph Waltz should go around to his house and sit and ask for a glass of milk and then inquire about where the Oscar is and then walk out with it.
For a glass of milk.
Quite nice. Yes.
Is he Best Supporting Actress Monique in Precious? And we haven't had Precious over here.
No, we haven't had a lot of these, actually.
Penelope Cruz in Nine, I feel that's a reach.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, again, she was fine, but... Oh, see, Julianne Moore in A Single Man. That could be. Single Man is meant to be very good.
Yeah,
I'd like to see
Colin
that.
Firth, isn't
yes.
it? In apparently the role of his career.
Yeah.
Really?
Apparently.
Mr. Darcy.
Mr. Darcy. Best Foreign Language from The White Ribbon, which I'm pleased about, with Michael Haneker. And I haven't seen it, but I hear very, very good things about that one. Particularly when I spoke against Broken Embraces, which didn't really do it for me. Yeah. So fair play. Animated feature Up, I think, a kind of obvious.
Probably,
really.
Yeah. Some people seem to be saying Fantastic Mr. Fox. Well, not they would have picked it over it, but no. Would have liked to see. But I know Fantastic Mr. Fox, I've gone off massively over time. Although Cloud and the Chance of Meatballs, I would have liked to have won.
Well, yeah.
There's no way it was going to beat Up, but it should have won.
It's wonderfully bonkers.
I saw actually on Twitter, Edgar Wright was saying, finally saw Cloud and the Chance of Meatballs, and it was brilliant. So many excellent sight gags.
Yeah, it is.
So just to reiterate, go and watch Cloud and the Chance of Meatballs, or rent the DVD.
Yeah. I think Coraline is better than Cloudy with a Chance, though.
Up is better than Cloud.
I'd watch Cloud and the Chance of Meatballs again over Coraline.
I suppose it's probably more fun, but I do think that.
In rewatchability terms, Cloud and the Chance of Meatballs, I think, beats Up and Coraline.
I'm not sure, you know. I think you just like laugh again, and then third time you'd be like, I think it would be one that you buy, watch, and then sell. Whereas I think with Coraline, you come back to it again.
Exactly. So if you want to buy it for cheap, look on Amazon. No. It'll be there.
Stop whoring yourself out.
Fair enough. Best screenplay, Jason Reitman for and Sheldon Turner, in fact, for Up in the Air, which again we look forward to reviewing next time.
Yep.
Best original song, Crazy Heart. That was a song called The Weary Kind, which again we haven't had here, but I'm looking forward to that because Jeff Bridges looks like he's doing very, very good in it. And best original score was Up, which I would agree. I nearly bought it and didn't quite, but there you are.
I mean, Avatar, struck me, I think mainly because I was certain it was James Horner, and then was pleased when it actually turned out to be James Horner, but I can't really remember much of it.
The only other two I do want to quickly mention is because they break up the actors thing into musical comedy and drama as well. And best actress, Meryl Streep for Julie and Julia, which we're not really in this country, but apparently in America they go, but it is the performance of the year. No, whereas we're going, but it's she's bonkers.
She's just doing a silly voice.
She just acts a bit drunk. And whereas actually Americans who know what the actual original person sounded like, so that's fine. Best actor musical comedy went to Robert Downey Jr. for Sherlock Holmes, which we haven't reviewed properly, so we should do that as well.
We can do that possibly now.
Okay.
Looking down the other options, Joseph Gordon-Levitt for 500 Days of Summer, maybe.
Yeah.
But Robert Downey Jr. for Sherlock Holmes, considering he's very well established, on some levels, as Iron Man. Because he's done lots of things over his career.
Yes.
But Iron Man feels very Robert Downey Jr.
It's also because it's coming again, isn't it? So
yes.
You can't forget.
But then to there being another huge franchise, but playing a noticeably different character. I mean, not radically different, but a noticeably different character is an achievement in itself, I think.
And everyone loves a bit Danny Jr. He's a popular
character. I think so.
Yeah.
But because he's earned it rather than just sort of phoning it in. So Sherlock Holmes, we can move on to.
Indeed. Yes.
You've not seen this.
I have not seen it. It's been out many. You've seen it three times.
I've seen it three times. By convoluted reason. I saw it Boxing Day because we're up in Scotland. My parents and sister wanted to go shopping. I didn't. So I thought, I'll go to the cinema and go and see Sherlock Holmes. First time I've ever been to the cinema by myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
First time ever. It's now start of a trend, which I haven't done since.
No. But one day.
Start somewhere.
Exactly. So saw that. Really, really enjoyed it. The next day, we had an evening to kill as a family. Thought, we could go to the cinema. What's on? And the options were pretty much boiled down to Nine or Sherlock Holmes. And I was happy to see it again. And we figured that it was the most easygoing option for all four of us. So saw that. My mum wasn't a fan.
Really?
She just doesn't really do action films. It just wasn't her thing. But she was glad that we all enjoyed it.
Oh, good. That's nice.
So, and then got back home. Jen had been away, come home, wanted to see Sherlock Holmes and made me go and see it again.
I did. He doesn't
someone else to go and see it with. You were going to see it with your cat, Jenny's housemate.
No. I managed to make her go and see it because I was like, I'm going, come on. And she caved.
So. Exactly. So why did you need to persuade me?
Because I don't think she would have gone without you.
Well, that's true.
You see, these femmes fatales, you see.
We're all weak and fluffy on
the inside.
Anyway.
So the fact that you saw it three times presumably means it's quite good.
Yes, it is extremely good. Because there are a few films I've seen three times in the cinema, and it's normally part not a measure of I'm desperate to see it three times. It's normally like circumstances of people saying, come and see it, and I go, all right then, because it is good enough, I will gladly go and see it again.
Mm.
Because I think people from the trailer say, no, but it makes him an action hero, and it's really not actiony at all.
No.
Again, I think a bit like The Book of Eli, so the actiony bits get put into the trailer. It's like, there's an explosion and there's a chase and there's a boat nearly hits him. But that's it. I mean, the big action bits are in the trailer.
Yes.
And the rest of it is just him wandering around talking to people, trying to work things out, which is what Sherlock Holmes is meant to do.
Well, true.
And yes, gets into a couple of fights, but that's quite
a
low-level
action.
Film.
There's going to be a couple of those.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that this is the least Guy Ritchie of all Guy
Ritchie films.
It really
is. He's reined himself in
surprised.
A lot.
And that therefore it's the best Guy Ritchie film for quite some time. So
I mean, there was a point quite early on where Sherlock Holmes needs to take out a watchman. And he runs through the fight in his head and says, right, I know this about this man, so I'm going to do this and do this and do this. And we see it all played out in slow motion, Ritchie-esque.
Oh, yes.
And then he runs in and takes him out, exactly how we've just seen.
Yeah.
And that's repeated again slightly too soon, not that long afterwards. He does the same thing again.
Yes.
In a different fighting situation. But then that's it. There's only those two moments.
Okay.
So it doesn't outstay its welcome. And yeah, beyond that, it's all fairly conventionally directed, but not in a bad way. I mean, very effectively, but it's not very quick cut, over the top. And Sherlock and Robert Downey Jr. is very good as Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Andrew Law.
Yeah, the chemistry. I mean, people keep talking about the chemistry between them, but it's true. It's they have very good banter, and
a bit of a bromance.
It is. Unfortunately, I know. Hateful term. Hateful term, though it is.
Romantic was actually one of the top 10 words voted that they should not have
ever come up with in the first place.
Yeah. So
fair
enough.
No, but it is very. And it's weird because watching the TV show House, because House and Wilson are based sort of on Holmes.
Oh, they
Watson.
Are, yes. Yeah.
But I've never really watched any Sherlock Holmes live action versions, but I have watched a lot of House. So, but now seeing Holmes and Watson sparring and bantering off each other, it feels like House and Watson.
Yeah,
House and Wilson.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, I know.
But it's very much back and forth. Watson being infuriated at Holmes, but going along with it anyway. And Holmes just abusing his friendship with Watson every step of the way, trying to break up him and his fiance.
To some extent, yes.
No, just to some extent, he's not because Watson is. You know, seeing a woman about to propose and Holmes really isn't happy about this.
So he wants it more to himself. It's that bromance thing. I'm sure of it.
Stop saying bromance.
Bromance.
Duh!
but it's well paid. I mean, it's quite long. It's like 2.25 hours.
It doesn't feel like it at all.
It all just works by. Yeah. And also, there are lots of... At the very end, Holmes is talking to the bad guy saying, you did this and this and this and I saw this and this and this. It could be very exposition-y. But it's not. It's right on just the right edge of spelling out, I saw this. Mainly, I think, because it's interesting.
Yeah.
And you sort of see flashbacks to Holmes saying, I saw this, and this means this. And we cut back saying, we did see that. But at no point in the film do they zoom in and say, hey, look at this, this will be relevant later.
You see stuff when you go going, okay, and we know that Sherlock Holmes is doing his thing. We're going to find out. This is going to be good.
Yeah. I mean, especially they go into the home of a bad guy who had been doing something. Earlier on in the film, and there's lots of equipment scattered around, and we sort of see it all, but it looks just sort of like background viewing. Oh, look, he's got all this equipment. And then towards the end, Sherlock Holmes is saying, I saw this, which means this, and this, which means this. And so it's all thought out.
Piece it together if you.
Because it involves this bit of equipment I know does this from my time in Africa.
Yeah.
So you can't really piece it together, but you sort of can. I mean, you can see. At points, you can see how the strings are pulled, which makes it interesting because you know who the bad guy is and what's going on roughly, but not everything, and so it all gets revealed.
Oh, if it's still out in a week's time, I'll go and see it then. So it's been doing pretty well, though, hasn't it?
Yeah,
it's definitely.
Are they going to make more? Is it?
I think very much so.
It'd be kind of nice to have a new sort of. I sort of hesitate to say this, but a sort of Indiana Jonesy type.
Well, true.
Action.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones has run out of steam, it turns out. So.
Well,
no, they're talking about the fifth one.
No! Yeah, I mean, just because they make it doesn't mean it hasn't run out of steam.
Well, I think that's true.
It's just being pushed along.
Two men on one of those carts with the handles at each end. So Sherlock Holmes, I mean, it's almost certainly been and gone for most people by now. But if you haven't yet seen it, but are feeling, Arthur Conan Doyle would hate it. I think it's a slightly modern version, but not nearly as modern as a lot of people
Our tweets are saying similar things. Tim Weeks, the idiot, I presume he's an idiot, called Tim Weeks.
Yeah.
Only because we know someone called Tim Weeks.
I'm fairly sure that is our Tim Weeks.
Might
it's another Tim Weeks, and I'm
really sorry.
I'm sure you're not an idiot.
But you share your name with an idiot. Tim Weeks. Tim,
sorry,
if you're listening,
Tim.
I'm surprised, because I don't think you listen.
No,
but he sent us a tweet anyway. Sherlock Holmes was a thoroughly enjoyable romp through London, even if Doyle is spinning in his grave. Wife loved it as well. So there you go.
Fair enough.
And Sean Jacks said, Sherlock Holmes, very good, very clever, very deep.
Mm.
4.5 out of 5. Nice. You think, if you're going to call it 4.5 out of 5, why don't you make it 9 out of 10?
Yeah.
I'd have thought.
Yeah, if you're going for a scale out of 5.
Don't go for the decimals.
Having said that, Roger Ebert uses a 4-star system and yet does half stars. So why not just go out of 8?
Madness. Craziness.
I'm fairly convinced that the reason he uses 4 rather than 5 stars, possibly he's just evolved that over time, but also because he gets forced into using stars. He doesn't want to. But the newspaper saying, oh, you have to have a star. So I reckon he uses 4 stars just so he won't ever give a 5-star review.
True.
So it can't just be stuck in a Roger Ebert 5-star. Yes. You have to say Roger Ebert 4 stars, and then people just don't use them. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so, we digress.
If that's it on Sherlock Holmes, then we can move. Well, Sherlock Holmes is, of course, an historical film.
Yeah, segue in, Paul.
It's in this week of history.
Hey.
There you go. There you go. So here we go. Here are some dates. You tell me what the film is. Okay. January the 17th, 1781. Ooh, mystery and intrigue. Benjamin Martin defeats the British by running into enemy fire armed with a flag. People follow him, and luckily some have guns.
That's going to be The Patriot.
Correct. No. That's right. That's right indeed. The Patriot.
Film full of lies.
Yes, indeed. That's the one.
Yeah.
English didn't do that.
Well, that's talking slightly from knowledge rather than specific knowledge. So general, I'm fairly sure it is mostly rubbish.
Yeah.
But anyway. Much as Braveheart was.
January 18th, 2003. Crime boss Lupino is interviewed about the drug Valkyr. I remember what
Max
awful
Payne.
Film. Max Payne.
I haven't seen that one.
Exactly.
No, fair enough. No, Valkyr, I don't even remember it from the film because I've tried to wipe that from my brain. I just know it from the games.
January the 20th.
It's not our fault that you don't get the reference.
1993.
That's what makes it a quiz.
Seizing at this one, Jen. Seizing at this one.
Oh, no.
Okay.
So much pressure.
Yep, so much pressure. January 20th, 1993. Dr. Richard Kimball is
a fugitive.
Did and later convicted for the murder of his wife. It's The Fugitive, yes.
Sorry.
Well done. Well done.
I thought Jen might get there, so I needed to beat her.
See if you can interrupt with this one if you can. Okay. January 21st, 1947. Rick and Evie O'Connell arrive in Shanghai on Chinese New Year's Eve to visit Evie's brother at his nightclub, Imhotep's. And to this is a long one. And you interrupt at any time.
Oh, no, I could interrupt now, but I'm trying to be nice to Jen. But frankly, she's...
Just interrupt. She
is it Pearl Harbor?
No.
No.
It's the Mummy, Curse of the Dragon Emperor.
Oh, shit.
Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. But
yes.
Close.
That was a disappointing film.
January 24th.
Not Pearl Harbor. Crime the Club Imhoteps. In Shanghai.
Do you know where Pearl Harbor is?
That's a lack of film and historical
knowledge.
It's the
way you look at me going, yeah.
Because I saw it with you not that long ago. Anyway.
Two more. You can still
I
win.
Give up. January 24th,
2003. Julie Powell. That's Julie Powell.
Julia.
Correct! Hey! I haven't said the rest. But she breaks out in tears at the prospect of cooking with aspics.
That was extremely high pressure.
That was a very good impression of Julia Child, wasn't it? You win the Golden Globe with that one.
Brilliant.
Ooh, row. Saucer milk table for two. January 25th, 2004. Final one. Professional contract killer Vincent holds the taxi driver Max hostage as he rampages through LA with killings for money.
That will be...
Oh, is that Tom Cruise film?
It is.
Yeah. Can you think of the name? What's the name?
I'm being nice again.
I'll give you a quick rhymes just... with the lateral.
Collateral.
Hey, well done.
Well done. No hints whatsoever.
Sabbatical, I don't know.
Sabbatical.
Sabbatical, yes.
Sabbatical, yes.
Tom Cruise takes time off from his busy life of killing. To tour the country for 6 months.
Let's take a sabbatical from that feature for
God.
Another week or two. Well done, well done. You always look forward to it. At the end of it, you're always crying. So it never works, is it?
You need to have done the research, then.
I think I'm just going to look at your website next time.
I think that's the way to.
Just cheat.
Come prepared.
Yeah.
That's just mean.
No, that's what you would do if you'd already thought of it.
No, I don't. I don't need to. Sorry.
It's not cheating, it's research.
That was quite a grueling test or quiz. Yeah. Or exam, you could say.
Can you hear the segue coming, people?
There's a film called Exam, which I've seen.
Oh dear.
It
started with a segue, ended with a whimper. It's a film that was out a couple of weeks ago. It'll have been and gone. It wasn't even there in the first place.
I don't think I've seen it.
No, I only saw it because I had an afternoon to kill in London and found it at Art House Cinema. But it's a shame because it's a British film, independent film, and when it's on DVD, support it, go see it, find it, seek it. It's good, and it's just a nice little film. It's pretty much it is set in one room, and the plot of it is quite simple. I think it's called the Apprentice, but with more
bizarre things. I don't know what the word is.
Brilliant sentence that was.
I was going to say with guns, but there's no real gun. There's one gun, but with violence, there's not much violence. But no, the apprentice goes mad.
Fictionalised apprentice.
Yeah, it's sort of. To be honest, I didn't think I was going to enjoy it to start with because it's one of these very arty opening titles where it said, you know, it says like, was it Spike Lee calls his films a Spike Lee joint? Is that right? Mm. Rather than a Spike Lee film. And this one said, it's by a guy called Stuart Hazeldine, and it said, a Stuart Hazeldine view. I thought, oh, it's like a sideways view of the world, Stuart Hazeldine style. And I just thought, oh, that's just a bit pretentious. And then rather than say, in the near future or whatever, other than the opening titles thing, it just said soon in rather enigmatic letters that then faded away. And I thought, oh, still a bit pretentious. but actually, as it unfolded, I really started to enjoy it. And the plot of it, quite simply, is eight people in a room are there for an exam. Which it takes a bit of time to work out exactly what the exam is for, but it's for a job, basically. Colin Salmon, who we know from the Bond films.
From the Bond films. And from Alien versus Predator.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Alien versus Predator versus Salmon. Doesn't last long.
Yeah. Just ends up flaps around on the ground for a bit and then dies.
And then gets eaten.
In fact, just his character.
He doesn't play a salmon.
Here he does.
That'd be great. Yeah. I'd love to be Colin Salmon's age. Yeah, Colin, we've got a role for you. Is it another salmon? Yeah. When will they look past the name? anyway, Colin Salmon walks in, and it sounds like a joke now. Oh dear! Some violence
just
has just
stamped on my foot
in the studio.
Hilarity.
Sorry.
Exactly.
Oh, look! I know you lost this week in movie history. It's actually like being
fired. They're destroying each other.
Anyway,
that's exactly the sort of thing that happens in the film because he comes in. He's the invigilator. And he comes in and says, right, okay, you're here for the exam. The rules are you can't communicate with myself or with the guard here, and you cannot spoil your paper, and you cannot leave the room. If you break any of those rules, then you'll be disqualified.
Right.
And the guard will escort you out. And you're not killed. It's not one of these, like, you know, where, you know, you leave the room and it's just an airlock door. And you just don't get the job.
So it's like, it's a slightly bizarre. Oh, no, so you can leave the room, but then you can't come back.
You can leave the room, yeah, exactly.
If you leave the room, then you've left. Yeah.
Exactly. And then he says, okay, so turn over your papers now. And they turn over the paper, and it's blank. And there's the film for you. So it unfolds from there.
Just eight people staring at a blank sheet of paper for 2 hours.
Pretty quickly, they realise they can talk to each other. Because otherwise, long, painful film of just yes. I found it really intriguing, a premise which to start with, you're thinking, yeah, but can they really get 90 minutes out of this?
Yeah.
Yes, they can, and there's a good 3 or 4 very sort of tense, almost actiony bits. With a very simple premise, they take it a really long way, and so I would well recommend it.
Yeah.
Only slight criticism I do have is that I sort of worked it out, and the big thing at the end of... Because the whole thing is, what is the question? Rather than what the answer is, they've got to find what the question is first, and then they can write the answer. And of course, if you write down the wrong answer, that could be counted as spoiling the paper, and you're escorted out. There are some very interesting ways that, like, the bad guy in there, played by Luke Mabley, who's brilliant, his first big role, and he's really, really good in it. But there's some really nice conniving ways he gets other people to spoil their papers or gets them to break the rules. So he's the real, sort of, real just arsehole, really. He's wonderfully, wonderfully done. But I did sort of work it out a little bit early. But still, it does leave you guessing. So it's up to the last minute as to how it goes. So well worth a look. Similar, actually, to... There's a film called Fermat's Room, which I coincidentally saw this week as well, which is on DVD, Spanish film, which is kind of similar idea. 4 mathematicians in a room have to solve mathematical problems, otherwise the walls come in.
Right.
So again, you know, and similar small set, you know, trying to work out
getting
things.
Smaller by the minute from the sound of it.
Very small set, exactly, yeah. And small cars getting splodgier by the minute. Both, and again, Fermat's Room, I think might just have the edge.
Okay.
In terms of which is better, but I really enjoyed both.
Yeah.
And so if that's your thing, then I recommend both.
I'll have to stick them both on my rental list.
Indeed.
On a similar low level independent film way, on TV the other night, a film I'd never even heard of, but it came on after something else, and the continuity announcer just said, "And now you're an independent film blending animation and something," and I was starting to reach the remote.
Yeah.
It's by Richard Linklater.
Okay.
And I paused.
Nice.
And it was called Waking Life, and it was a live action film. Which then got animated over, much like, I can't remember the name of it, the Keanu Reeves...
Oh, A Scanner Darkly.
Yes.
And Walter Bashir as well.
Yes. So it looks sort of like that. And there's no real plot. I mean, it's essentially, it's sort of an art house experimental thing by Richard Linklater. Mm. It's just this guy has fallen, falls asleep. I can't remember if he wakes up at any point before the end, but it's this guy's dreams, mostly him walking through his dreams, coming across random people and just having a chat about the nature of dreams and the nature of reality and philosophy.
Okay.
And here I'm just seeing other people talking about it and then trying to wake up, and has he woken up, has he not woken up, what's lucid dreams, and it's largely just talking about people chatting about philosophy and ideas in a 90-ish to 90 minute 2 hour film.
Okay. As Linklater does very well in Before Sunset.
So I mean, the dialogue is very much like that, if you can call it dialogue. It's generally just, it's almost like a series of interviews with people, or some people just being normal people being interviewed, and other sort of characters putting forward a point of view. It does also have the two characters from Before Sunset and Before Sunrise in it.
Oh, really?
just there, but it was made before Sunset.
Okay.
Right.
So, before Sunset.
Yes.
Before Squared Sunset.
Yes. So it doesn't quite fit into that continuity because they're so in bed together just chatting about stuff. So it doesn't fit into the continuity of those two films. But it's just those two characters having the same conversation. Okay. And it was very watchable, and enough so that it was in the background, and then I thought, no, actually I'm gonna sit down and watch this properly.
Mm.
And it's just if you like philosophical thoughts and debates and, you know, what is life, what are dreams, how can you define reality and things like that. It's just people chatting about that, really.
Yeah.
So it's worth a watch, and it's quite entertaining.
Cool.
Actually, on that, I sort of reality odd things. I'm still watching, in fact, so I'm not going to properly review it yet. But a film called The Fool, which is the same director who did The Cell, which I think you'd be watching. You
know, I actually watched that. Yeah. In fact, I think Waking Life was on after The Cell.
Oh, well, there you are.
Which was, do you hate it, Jen?
The Cell? I actually quite liked it. Some of the script is
that Jennifer Lopez.
It is. It's generally, it's not a good film. Although I did discover while bored one evening, putting off work one evening, The Cell came on just as I started playing the game Portal, and discovered you can play through Portal in almost exactly the same time it takes to watch The Cell.
Is that right?
That's how much attention I was paying to The Cell. No, I mean, cause it's interesting visuals, but mostly pointless.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
well,
that's
you know.
The thing, and actually, The Fall, I'm finding similarly. It's actually it's a guy. I only rented it because it's a similar idea to a book I was thinking of writing,
right?
Which is about a guy telling a story to a young girl who, when the version of The Fall, any time that she sort of asks him a question or picks him up on a little detail or corrects him, he sort of explains it into the story. So the story adapts around the way he's talking about it.
Yeah.
And so far it's visually very interesting. It's actually, I think, produced by Spike Jonze and David Fincher.
Oh, right.
So a couple of big names behind it.
Yeah.
But visually really interesting. Clearly a wannabe Gilliam. Mm. I think Gilliam does it better.
Mm.
The main guy in it is actually Lee Pace, who you may know as the pie maker in Pushing Daisies.
Oh, yes.
And Little Elf.
Oh, Pushing Daisies. I was forgotten about that.
That was a sad loss.
A sad loss. Yes. So, yeah, I'm still watching The Fall. We'll see how that goes. I was going to quickly mention as well, Once Upon a Time in America, which I won't go into details about it because I love it so and I could talk for hours.
Well, yeah.
But no, I did show that about a week or two ago to my wife because it's my favourite film of all time. And she finally decided that...
Frankly, I'm amazed you married her without having shown it to her first.
She decided that she should watch it and see if she could appreciate it, even though she hates gangster films. And it
turns out...
On paper, you know, she would hate this film. And in reality, she hated the film.
It's good to know you knew her well. You know?
Exactly. Well, but bless her for doing it. It's nearly 4 hours long. And and I kept saying, we can stop. I can just tell you what happens. And slightly worryingly, at the end of it, she sort of said, I didn't enjoy it, but I now understand you better. That's slightly worrying for a film that's quite violent and has two rape scenes in it. But I just appreciate it for the nice parts of the story, which are a story of redemption and a story of betrayal, and sort of really epic in terms of gangster movies. It sort of covers everything from the tens, the 30s, the 40s, and I think it's a lovely film. But anyway, my wife doesn't agree.
No,
and the other one I saw was Le Dîner de Cons, which is a French film, which translates as a title we can't say. As you can imagine. Dinner. I only rented it because I thought it was a different film called Dinner for One.
Right.
Which is
traditional.
Don't know
French, do you?
No, really, no. Well, no, I forgot. I knew there's a film called Something About Dinner, which is very popular in mainland Europe, which we don't have over here.
Right.
And every new year, German TV particularly shows it all the time, and it's really popular over there.
Mm-hmm.
I've since found out it's popular in Scandinavia and Australia. And Dinner for One is actually, it's in English. but it's a 15-minute sort of short. It's a bit like Mr. Bean, basically. Okay. It's sort of slapstick. It's quite amusing. Saw it on the internet since. Worth a look. Le Dîner de Caen is not that film. It's a French farce. And I was watching it and just thought, I want to get through this. It's all right. You know, they're actually remaking it in America.
All right.
With, I think, Steve Carell. And I just was watching it thinking, I want to get this in the post so I can get the next DVD out of the way. Turns out, if you're watching a foreign language film with subtitles, put it on fast forward. As long as you can speed read, you can watch it in about 20 minutes.
Brilliant.
So I recommend that. Little tip for you there.
Yeah.
20 minutes is all you need. Whisk through it and done. There you are.
That's one way of doing it.
Indeed. So that brings us on to, I think, your emails and tweets.
Yes.
We've had email from Jed here. Jed says, we're talking about films, he's telling us about the films he's looking forward to this year. And Jed says, in 2010, I'm looking forward to such films as Salt, starring Angelina Jolie.
Right.
Which looks pretty good. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. Clash of the Titans, Christopher Nolan's latest Inception, and of course Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Might have a look at Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, and perhaps Toy Story 3 as well. Well, it'd be a fool not to, I think. A fool not to.
Yes.
Yeah. I know Blair, we've covered Blair.
We have covered Blair.
Yes,
we've covered Blair with lots of wonderful rosy things. So
we've also got an email from Johan. It says, "Hello, Movie Banter folks. I forgot to wish you all happy birthday because I was busting my brain trying to come up with the top movies of the year. Mm. One, Avatar. Two, Inglourious Basterds. Three, District 9. I think it was fair enough.
I think
though, no Hurt Locker though.
Hardly agree. No.
But still, no, I think it's not too much to disagree with there. Mm. I wrote that list before I saw The Road, which I thought was a bleak yet realistic view of what the end of the world may look like. And before I saw Sherlock Holmes, which I think was a strongly acted film with a righteous score and great visuals, courtesy of Guy Ritchie. And I think I scared my cat screaming, "You're a girl," at Paul.
I can't quite remember why people were told to scream.
But I'm sure it was justified.
Oh, it might be Marley and Me.
I think it was that, and also the fact I chose Love Actually.
I watched Marley and Me, by the way.
Oh, have you?
And I cried.
Did you cry like a girl? There you go, you see?
only like a girl, though, which is slightly disturbing.
As if you were a girl.
You didn't cry because you're a girl.
I'm a woman.
You cried, oh, I see.
Thank you.
A woman.
Yes. Whoa, man. Yes.
fair point. I'm interested to know, though, Johan's saying that The Road and Sherlock Holmes sort of maybe displacing his top three then, by saying he wrote that list and then The Road and Sherlock Holmes came along. Does that mean that...
It would change.
The Road or Sherlock Holmes are the best film of last year? I don't know. I don't know. I'm just talking.
Who can say?
Who can say? Some tweets we've had. Super Toys said, "Watched Paranormal Activity a few weeks ago. What a bore! The leading man was fun to watch when not playing Ghost Hunter, though."
No, fair enough. I think that may be one of the first anti-Paranormal Activity things I've heard. And various tweets from Sean Jakes, just throwing quick reviews our way, saying, "Alvin 2, what can I say? Three chipmunks sing, then three more do. Very annoying for anyone over 6 years old."
Well, I'll go and see it. I'm just amazed.
Maybe he's got children under 6 years old.
What a lovely dad.
I do like his review of All About Steve, though, which I'm happy to say I haven't seen.
No.
Look forward to not seeing.
Yeah.
All About Steve. Typical Sandra Bullock film. Completely pointless. Girls might like it, though.
Oh, thanks.
Absolute
for that.
Bullock. Nice to know that he's crediting you with sort of little Sandra intelligence.
Bullock, yeah,
as
yeah.
a whole agenda.
I actually, that's a bit harsh saying typical Sandra Bullock film. And the Sandra Bullock has done some very good films. And even rom-com-wise, things like The Proposal, is quite watchable. Mm. But All About Steve... By all accounts, I think I haven't heard a single good thing about it. It's utterly execrable.
Nothing.
Yeah. I think largely she plays someone who's pretty much mentally ill, and then everyone laughs at her for the entire film.
Yeah,
it's just a bit weird.
Not ideal.
He also says, "Daybreakers, okay action, but too vampire-y for me. Don't get all that stuff. No real story involvement." The thing is, but I'm quite vampire-y. I think someone else on Twitter earlier in the week was saying that basically it's a massive improvement on all the glittery, twilighty vampires.
Right.
It's proper, toothy, sunlight, anti-sunlight, tearing you apart vampires.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, vampires are very now, aren't they? They're very...
I know, but generally speaking, they're all... I saw a trailer for The Vampire Diaries on TV the other day. I watched about half an episode of that and then stopped because I was bored and angry.
It's going to be overkill, if you'll excuse the pun.
Well,
it's
going to be... But that's more the more teenage angsty vampires. Whereas Daybreakers at least seems to be... Rather than just modern vampires, this is more. It's a world I don't think we've seen on film.
No,
yet entirely vampires with humans being the underdogs.
Yeah,
so
sounds a lot
see.
More predatorial. So,
And last tweet for this week, you can tweet us incidentally. Movie Banter is our tweety thing on Twitter.
We're also on Facebook.
Indeed,
just search Movie Banter.
You'll find us. Or indeed, of course, you can email us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes,
and our final tweet for this week is from the Sophie. Not any old Sophie.
Not any old Sophie.
The Sophie. Where the Wild Things Are, so magical. Not only did I bawl my eyes out, but I needed to wander around aimlessly for an hour. Mm. That's a film with an effect.
Fair enough,
you, clearly.
Yeah.
Maybe, unless you should wait for a lift, in which case you probably have to wander around anyway.
Well, yeah.
So that's it for this week, pretty much. Which just leads us on to Desert Island Flicks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Take us home.
Right.
So imagine the world's ended.
Yeah.
Which is the film? Which is the film that about the world's ending? Which
if it was one I was going to have to eat, it'd probably be Judy and Julia. But if it wasn't that literal, then... Yeah. Do you know what? I've had a tough day watching The Road.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for Wally because I can.
Oh.
Because I
Why
can.
Why wouldn't you?
Why the hope, wouldn't you? The sweetness, the romance, the fact that it is... You know, obviously they leave Earth. It is justified, this choice. So.
Well, you wouldn't think of Wally as a post-apocalyptic... But it is, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I mean, the world is destroyed.
It is.
So everyone's left.
So
it's a barrel of laughs, though, for
it is.
Post-apocalyptic
in terms of Wally versus The Road.
Yeah,
it's
one of,
I'm going to go for Wally right now. Yes.
It's one of your more cheerful post-apocalyptic films.
Indeed,
I'm going down more the other end of the scale and to Mad Max.
Nice.
Mad Max 2, if I had to pick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nicely done.
Because Mad Max is slightly more... It's not quite post-apocalyptic. I mean, it's more people sort of getting by.
Yeah.
Mad Max 2 is slightly more piecing together bits of junk and out in the desert. And that's slightly more what people think. Mm. When people think Mad Max, they tend to really think Mad Max 2.
Right.
I was going to say, Tina Turner.
Or I think in America it may just be called The Road Warrior or Mad Max The Road Warrior because the first one wasn't released over there initially, so they didn't call it Mad Max 2 because there was no first one. And not Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, which I saw not too long ago and angered me.
Oh dear.
I really don't know why. I should watch it again. For whatever reason, I was working my way through all three films and
just stuck it on.
Well, true. But just put it on, and I think it's all the little... He hangs out with a large group of kids at one point.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're just irritating.
Yeah.
And it was that... It's kind of like the Robocop 3 thing, in that they took a franchise that was on a certain level, and they just make it a slightly more kiddie-friendly.
Yeah.
It's a little bit lightweight.
Aren't they doing a reboot soon of Mad Max?
Yeah, with Tom Hardy and someone else.
Oh.
Yes, which could be interesting, because I think there's more to do there.
Yes, I think so.
Although, now, of course, you've got The Road and...
Well, exactly.
But it's slightly more driving based, which
originally
is,
did it better. Yeah.
So that's my hat in the ring.
Good work. I'm going to go for slightly unusual one, which is On the Beach, 1959 film, based on a Neville Shute book, which I read as a child and quite liked. And it's black and white film, Fred Astaire, and
post-apocalyptic.
But Fred Astaire on a tap dance is away.
The world is destroyed except for his shoes.
Put on a happy face.
God.
It's about nuclear war has happened and decimated the planet, and there's a small band of survivors in Australia, and it's just about their last days, and it's again kind of a nice film because it's about how they get by and how there's a bits of petrol left, but the nuclear sort of wave is coming to them. They know they're going to pop it, and it's all about what they get up to in the last days and how they cope. But the nice thing is that it hasn't, there's no sort of solution really, and there's a whole thing about a submarine which goes up to the west coast of America to see if there is any survivors up there and any way of stopping it all, and I'm pretty sure it ends by sort of saying, well, there isn't, and so it's quite bleak and hopeless, but yet with a sort of a bit of again that band of hope in the middle of it, the survivors and all that. I just thought it was a lovely film, and particularly for when it was made, sort of late 50s and black and white. No other film was like it out there.
Time. That's pretty forward thinking, really.
So I really like that one. So that's my one.
Brilliant. I might have to go and find it
On the Beach. Have a look.
On the Beach,
we shall. Indeed. I think that's a lot.
We've topped the hour mark yet once again. So hopefully you're in it for the long haul.
If we're doing it every 2 weeks,
you can listen to it in half chunks if you want. Just do what you want.
Have a cup of tea. You've got
2 weeks till the next one.
Exactly. Like so hopefully
that's what the pause button's for.
Hopefully they'll keep you going for the next little fortnight or so. So be well. Do drop us an email or a tweet or whatever you'd like to do.
Yes. And just get in touch with any films you watch or films you think we should watch or similar.
That'd be lovely.
We love to hear from you.
Indeed.
Very true. So have a good week or two.
Till next time.
Cool. See you next time.
Be gone.
Bye.
Be well. I mean, not
be gone. Be off with you.
Exactly.
Set the dogs on you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.